welcome to Live Vedanta, a podcast where we explore simple living and high thinking. Each week, we join Vivek Gupta as he offers insights on bringing the divine into the daily. Over the last decade, Vivekji has shared his observations on the signs of independent joy with communities across North America and beyond.
Which name and sound is the most sacred, and why? Let's listen in on this next episode of the Meditation and Life series, in which Vivekji teaches us the most sacred mantra and its significance.
Greetings from Niagara Falls. If you say something about someone and that's not true, if you think something about someone and that's not true, we generally call that gossip. We generally call that prejudice. In Vedanta, we call this superimposition. We're imposing a behavior, we're imposing a personality trait on someone, and that's not true. Now I'm going to overtly call every one of you the worst gossipers, the worst when it comes to prejudice, because you've superimposed upon yourself that you're a body, that you're a mind, that you're an ego. Our course is a course on de-superimposition, to end the gossip, to end the prejudice. Our course is on keeping it real. Our only focus is reality. And we're exploring that this month through japa, japa masa. Japa sounds like another Sanskrit word, jalpa. Have any of you heard of the word jalpa? Jalpa means to prattle. And those who don't know about japa, they think it's prattling, right? Like a child who's learning how to speak, they just keep opening their mouth and making the same sound. Jalpa and japa are different. Jalpa is repetition, but japa is meaningful repetition. Note the difference. If I keep saying pencil, 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 how much can I really think about a pencil? It's extremely finite, so my thoughts will become distracted shortly. But when we take up Saraswati, when we take up infinity, there's endless content. So my thoughts are held on that idea. This is not jalpa, this is japa. Japa also means janma pati, ja and pa. Janma means to be born, and pati, to protect, like pati. So japa is that which protects you from being born again. The more we know about japa, we won't be born into superimposition or limitation. Swami Chinmayananda has written that if you chant a mantra 100,000 times, then that devata, the god whose name you're calling, begins to warm up. And I think a lot of us may be approaching that. If you think of your whole lifetime, how many times you chanted Om Namah Shivaya or Om Shri Hanumate Namaha, your mantra, you may have passed 100,000. And you begin to feel that lightness. You begin to feel that presence. A mala, another word for mala in English is garland. In a garland, there's flowers. In a mala, they're called mani. M-O-N-E-Y. Each of those is money. So if you have 1,000 bead mala, you have more money. It is M-A-N-I. Money means jewel. Those beads are also called mukta. I like that word better. That each of those circles is a way to help us feel mukti. And the meru bead is also known as the guru bead. And that's why you never cross the guru. You always are revolving around the guru. This we took up in the last chapter, Japa Yoga. We continue to chapter 17, which is the sacred mantra Om. Sacred mantra Om. A mantra is the closest representation of God. It is the least limited icon of infinity. Om is the subtlest of all mantras. Such few images, such few letters. The word mantra, the etymology of this word is, and you all know this, mananat trayate. Trayate means to transcend. Mananat means with reflection. A mantra will only help the mind to be transcendental if reflected upon. A mantra can only protect us, for us to transcend fear, if we reflect on this. Om is like the sheath to Brahman. Like a sheath to Brahman. And when you reflect upon Om, that sheath opens up. One of my favorite examples or comparisons that Swami Tejamayananda shared through the course, he was describing the Anandamaya Kosha. Again, a sheath, it's the ego sheath. He says the ego sheath is like eating a candy or a chocolate with the wrapper still on. If you can imagine like a Tootsie Roll, you know, because the wrapper is not so tight, and you put the whole Tootsie Roll in your mouth and you start chewing on it and sucking on it, there is some syrup or chocolate that comes out, but mostly you're chewing and tasting plastic, correct? But if you open that wrapper, there's ananda then. There's that sweet concoction of chocolate and caramel. Reflecting upon Om will help us to feel Brahman. The mantras in Sanatana Dharma are of three kinds. Just like everything, the time of the day, the food we eat, our bodies. There's tamasic mantras, rajasic mantras, and sattvic mantras. Tamasic mantras are invocations to harm others. We call that voodoo, isn't it? Like a voodoo doll where you're putting pins. You don't put pins in yourself. You don't have a doll of yourself. Rajasic mantras then naturally are not to harm others, but to benefit oneself. Please give me the mantra to win the lottery. Please give me the mantra to be young forever. And then sattvic mantras are not about harming others or benefiting oneself. They're collective. Like, sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. May all be happy. I'm included in that all. Mantras in Sanatana Dharma are categorized into Vedic and Pauranic. Vedic mantras are teachings from the Upanishad, like Tattvamasi. The Pauranic mantras relate to icons from our Puranas, like Ramayana, Mahabharata, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in our Vedanta and Bhagavata class, we recently studied about that awesome boy, Dhruva. and how he chants the 12-syllable mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So that's a Pauranic mantra. The Vedic mantras require more jnana. The Pauranic mantras require more bhakti. The Vedic ones, you have to think about it and feel it. The Pauranic ones, you have to surrender more and feel it. I was in Orlando the last few days for our Devi retreat, and we were studying Shiva Manasa Puja. And all of our Devis were given a solid framework to how to offer puja through Bhagavan Acharya Shankara. It's his text. Now, many Devis feel very inspired and they want to facilitate the Deepavali Puja. Usually, you do this at the mandir or you invite someone to do this, but they want to do it. So they want to know, what shloka do I use for each step? For offering a seat or snanam. So try to remember this, okay? Om, then the name of your Ishtadevata. Okay, for the sake of Deepavali, let's say Rama. Now here's the key. Brahmane. You have to insert Brahmane after the name of your Ishtadevata, Namaha. Because each name has a different termination. Like Hanuman, when you offer to Hanuman, becomes Hanumate. Shiva, when you offer to Shiva, becomes Shivaya. Now, most of us are not so proficient in Sanskrit where we know the declension of all of this. So if you put in Brahmane, we're saying that Bhagavan Rama is Brahman. Okay? So now, I would encourage all of you. You be the pujari. You can ask all of the people there for dakshina then. So Om Rama Brahmane Namaha. Om Lakshmi Brahmane Namaha. Okay? All right, let's really get into Om. Let's study details of Om. Om is known as Shabda Brahman. Shabda Brahman. Shabda means word. And this is very coolly related to the element space. Space is the subtlest element, and what is your subtlest sense organ? Your ear. Exactly. We learn the most through listening, not hearing, but listening. So that's why Om is known as Shabda Brahman. It's subtle. It's close. Like space is close to infinity, this sound is close to Brahman. Om is known as Pranava. Pranava means prana vyaptam. Prana is your breath, is your physiological functions. And vyaptam, vyaptam means to pervade. This is where the word Vishnu comes from. Vishnu pervades all. Pranava vyaptam. All of you take a slow, deep breath in and try to listen to your breath. I think it sounds like Om, but I could also be hallucinating or projecting all of this. Now, why this is known as pranava is because it pervades all mantras also. One has to chant Om before you begin that mantra. You can't just say Namah Shivaya. You have to say Om Namah Shivaya. Okay? So it's known as pranava. Om is made up of three letters, A, U, M. A is the beginning of the throat. If you all go, ah, it's not coming from your teeth or your palate, it's coming from your throat. And M comes at the end. So it's the beginning of your throat and end of your lips. And in between is that U. A, U, M is the whole range of sound. Om. And there's a cultural nuance here. The first letter that one writes in their Vidyarambham is Om. And the idea being that every other word, all of the other letters, are contained within Om, correct? This is the first letter and the last letter in Sanskrit. So whether it's Pala, whether it's Bala, whether it's table, whether it's Vivek or sky or God, all of that, those are really different names for Om. Om is also symbolic for the waking, dreaming, and sleep states. And why I share this relating to how it's spoken. The waking state is when you're most open, correct? You're most conscious of what's happening to you, what you're thinking about. Then the dream state, which is associated with you, is kind of in between. You're sort of conscious and sort of not conscious. And then is associated with the sleep state where you're not conscious. So you're closed then. So not just in the enunciation, but our states, our lokas, from opening to closing. And now I'll get to the important part. Okay, everything else I shared was more technicality, and it is quite beautiful to see the depth of what's shared. When one chants Om, there is an end to it, correct? I said there's a beginning and an end, an opening and a closing. The space, the time between the closing and the opening is known as Amatra. Amatra. So it's as if Om is made up of four letters. A-U-M, then no letter, then no letter. That is silence. This is also known as ajapa japa, where you engage in japa, but your focus is on the space and time between the chanting, the meaningful repetition. This is Bia, the fourth. It's known as the fourth state, and I'm not too fond of this description, because when you call this the fourth state, we all of a sudden give reality to the first and second and third to be almost as equal as the fourth. When in actuality, there is only silence. To make noise like I'm doing right now requires effort. It requires change. It requires becoming. But for silence, no effort, no change, no becoming. Just listen. Internalizing this more, you should end your pursuit of enlightenment bound. We've only experienced divinity. It's impossible otherwise. Infinity is not created. Infinity is not destroyed, which means infinity is. And specifically, infinity, there is no exclusivity. So we are infinite, but we're paying attention or not paying attention to the infinity, to the finite. This amatra, this ajapa, is training in shifting our focus from the matras, A-U-M, to that allows that A-U-M to be there. The focus of japa is to increase the space and time between chanting, between mantras. When someone's deeply distracted, they have to chant fast, correct? But when someone is immersed in that, calling out, bringing the mind to their center, calling out to their creator, they're feeling that in that silence, in that divinity. So there is no fourth. There is only chit. Chit is like a flashlight, okay? In the waking state, there's lots of forms and names in front of this flashlight. In the dream state, it's almost like, you know, in this home, there's a fair amount of windows. And when the sun sets or is setting, there's light in here, but it's much darker. You need lights to be able to read, but you don't need lights to do anything else. But to read, you do. So in front of this flashlight, there's a darkness that's now taking names. And in the sleep state, again, chit is this flashlight. And what's in front of it? Nothing. So now tell me, what's reality? What's keeping it real here? The forms and names that keep on opening and closing and opening and closing, or that flashlight? That's what the sacred mantra Om is the key to, which is why it pervades all mantras, which is why it's associated with the breath. This chapter, the big picture of this chapter, is for all of us to respect Om more. We treat it quite casually. We write it on stuff, we tattoo it to our bodies. And the more we respect it, and that's why I shared all of these technicalities with you, the more you respect Om, the more you will come to love Om. And it won't just be a symbol, you will feel that Om. And when respect and love are combined, that is known as reverence. Reverence will help us understand that Om is pointing inside, pointing deeper. And I can't help but just share one more analogy relating to this. Om is like the guru, you know? The guru is Bhagwan. The guru is Brahman, but the guru is not you as Brahman. The guru is saying that you are Brahman. Guru is the pointer. This is a sacred mantra, Om, and I hope, listening to what I have each in mind on these writings, that we all feel fortunate that we have such systematic teaching to de-superimpose what we've been pretending to experience this lifetime, all lifetimes.
If you enjoyed what you heard or want to learn more, share this episode with a friend or find us online at facebook.com/CM Niagara. For those on the journey of self-development, Chinmaya Mission Niagara provides a community forum for seekers to listen, reflect, and contemplate. This podcast is produced by the Young Adults of Chinmaya Mission, an international nonprofit working to transform individuals through the knowledge of Vedanta. Until next time, inspire, love, be.